will some tariffs be rolled back, and will there be some kind of indication that this is the beginning?
The ebb and flow of Phase 1 trade negotiations. It's Monday, November 11th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. You'll find us on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, deadly Aussie brush fires, Kashmir seeks tourists, snacking on bugs, and President Trump, 3 years after election. It's all on today's VOA Asia. U.S. President Donald Trump said Saturday that trade talks with China were moving along very nicely, but the United States would only make a deal with Beijing if it was the right deal for America. Trump told reporters at Joint Base Andrews before leaving for a visit to Tuscaloosa, Alabama, that the talks had moved more slowly than he would have liked, but China wanted a deal more than he did. The U.S. president said the trade talks with China are moving along, I think, very nicely. If we make the deal that we want, it will be a great deal, and if it's not a great deal, I won't make it. In an effort to find out if a U.S.-China trade deal is close, VOA Asia's Ira Melman spoke with Barry Naughton, the chair of Chinese International Affairs at the Graduate School of International Relations and Pacific Studies at the University of California, San Diego.
There are all kinds of leads on this thing. I had Trump yesterday saying that the talks are going on, but much slower than he'd like. And we can say, you know, what do you think is going on? You got the close of the China Import Expo on, earlier today. Where do you think the lead on this thing is?
Well, I think, to me, the most important thing right now is that the intense bargaining going on right now about whether the U.S. will remove some existing tariffs strikes me as a sign that the two sides are actually pretty close to coming to an agreement on this limited Phase 1 agreement. Of course, it's very hard to tell because we've been getting contradictory information. We get statements, just from the Trump administration, we get completely contradictory statements from different spokespersons from one day to the next.
You think there's a battle going on in the White House about this?
I suppose there's definitely a certain amount of argument going on. We know that Navarro is pushing for something tougher. I mean, he almost said himself that he wanted something tougher than what seemed to be on the table. But he was careful to say it was all up to President Trump. But I mean, I think the thing is, what's different this time is that what people are arguing about are not these sort of big conceptual issues, but really very, very detailed aspects of concession or not concession.
Like what, do you think?
Specifically, will some tariffs be rolled back, and will there be some kind of indication that this is the beginning of a more comprehensive tariff rollback? Because I think the thing is, this is essentially what the Chinese need to take back to their constituency. They need to say, well, Phase 1, we've made some big concessions, we're going to start buying agricultural products, but we got something, we got a roadmap to tariff removal. Now, maybe that will all fall apart, but at least we can say, hey, we did it. And conversely, I think Trump needs to say, hey, we got something. We're not just going back to the status quo ante. I mean, after all, if China buys agricultural products, well, China was buying agricultural products before this all started. So Trump has to be able to say, they're buying agricultural products again, and we got something else.
I'm hearing something like the Chinese are now selling things at extraordinarily low prices internationally. Have you heard that? Is that a move an offense against the U.S., or is that just for survival?
I think it's a little bit in between, but I would say this is basically the operation of market forces. I mean, China is suffering a significant amount of pain from U.S. actions, and as they try to maneuver around them, of course they encourage business with other parties, and so that means selling things cheaper, and it also means making some concessions to investors from foreign countries, right? I mean, there's already a big wedge, for instance, in how the automobile companies are treated. Mercedes and BMW are treated a lot better than General Motors and Ford right now. And, you know, so I think quite a bit of that is natural. So in other words, I guess if I had to choose between the two polls that you put up there, I'd choose the second, that this is basically, it's not a strategic offense against the United States. It's basically the operation of market forces. But it does show that China, you know, is suffering some significant economic hurt.
Barry Naughton, the chair of Chinese International Affairs at the Graduate School of International Relations and Pacific Studies at the University of California, San Diego. He was speaking with VOA Asia's Ira Melman. These are among some of the top Asia headlines that you'll find right now when you make a visit to voanews.com. Hong Kong protesters vandalize subway station, storm mall. Three dead as Australia battles bushfires. Thousands line up to see Japan's emperor. Laos defends latest plans to dam the Mekong. Foreign businesses expressed mixed views toward China's import expo in Shanghai. You'll find expanded coverage of all these stories and more when you make a visit to Facebook at VOA Asia and stop by the voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. At least three people have died in bushfires in Australia. Authorities in New South Wales say more than 150 homes have been destroyed as the state battled an unprecedented fire emergency that continued into a third day on Sunday. Officials are warning the number of people killed could rise as the fire-hit areas are inspected. At least 30 people have been injured. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
The bushfire crisis spans two states in eastern Australia. Monstrous walls of flame have terrorised towns and villages. Many fires in northern New South Wales and parts of Queensland continue to burn out of control, despite a military-style firefighting effort. Waterbombing aircraft have doused them from above, while hundreds of firefighters, many of them volunteers, have gone into battle on the ground. The full impact on life and property could take days to emerge. Bridges, schools and power lines, as well as many homes, have been destroyed. Others are counting their luck.
I've come back and my house is still there. It's rammed earth and it's still there. I can't believe it. My sheds are all gone and my house is still there.
I'm still gathering thoughts, trying to remember that what it was that I actually did see, whether or not I could believe what I saw.
Prime Minister Scott Morrison says the nation won't forget those affected by the fires.
Those who have been so directly and horribly impacted by these fires, those who have lost loved ones and those who will learn they have lost loved ones in the not too distant future, those who have lost homes, those who are sitting in the smouldered ruins of properties that once stood, they are the ones that Australians will be thinking of today.
Hot and windy weather combined with a long drought have made parts of eastern Australia a tinderbox. Cooler conditions Sunday helped firefighters, but the danger in eastern Australia is far from over. Authorities say they're likely to issue extreme fire warnings for a vast section of the New South Wales coast on Tuesday, as well as for inland regions. Areas around Sydney are considered to be particularly at risk. Queensland is also bracing for more hazardous conditions. Residents have been warned that if they're threatened by fire, they may not get help. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Cambodia has released opposition leader Kem Sokha from house arrest. He was detained 2 years ago and charged with treason. A court said that he is now banned from politics and cannot leave the country. Self-exiled Cambodian opposition leader Sam Rainsy is in Malaysia. He's attempting to return home. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're glad to have you with us today on VOA Asia. When the Indian government decided in August to abrogate a constitutional provision giving special status to the then state of Jammu and Kashmir, tourist season was at its peak. Tourists in Kashmir were advised by the Indian government to leave the state. But now the government has rolled back its advisory just in time for the winter tourist season. VOA's Rital Josi with cameraman Zubair Dar visited Srinagar to see if the decision will help the tourism industry recover its losses.
Rows and rows of closed shops, an eerie calm on the streets, and a heavy deployment of security forces everywhere. But according to the Indian government, all is well for tourists to visit Kashmir.
Things have become very stable compared to the situation earlier. We feel those who want to visit should do so. There will be snowfall in the months to come. The government has taken this decision lest anyone doubts it's not safe to come here under the changed circumstances.
Most hotels in Srinagar have been closed since August, and the taxi industry is hurting the most. Taxi drivers say the government's decision to lift its advisory is pointless.
What use is it of now? Yatra is over. The three-month-long tourist season is long over. Who will come here in winters?
48 kilometers away from the capital, Srinagar, Gulmarg attracts thousands each year for skiing, snowboarding, and other snow mountain activities. But on the way to Gulmarg, most hotels seem to be closed.
Hotel and restaurant owners, helpers, guides, horse owners are all sitting idle. There's no work.
Things were no different at Gulmarg with few tourists visible. Popular attractions like horse riding, riding all-terrain vehicles off the roads and local cable cars were mostly deserted. There are fears that Gulmarg's winter tourism, famous for its skiing, may not take off this year.
There aren't many skiers in India. We get more people from abroad. Those coming from foreign countries make their bookings through the internet. You may ask how they manage it in the pre-internet era. Back then, everyone knew the situation was normal.
Because of its natural beauty, Kashmir is a top destination for vacationers in the region. Due to its high volume of visitors, the Kashmir tourist industry is estimated to earn about $700 million annually. But since August, the industry has lost over $210 million in income. Locals say there doesn't seem to be any immediate recovery in sight. Rithul Joshi, VOA News, Srinagar.
Coming up, bugged by hunger. You're listening to VOA Asia.
VOA Asia is on Twitter. Follow us at VOA Asia for developing stories in Asia, perhaps close to you. Our Twitter feed also has updates on programs you can hear and see with links to easily find them. VOA Asia Twitter, we're always online for you.
This news from VOA Asia, at least 13 people were killed and many fishermen remained missing as Cyclone Bulbul hit the coasts of Bangladesh and India. Authorities have warned fishermen not to venture into the sea for the next 12 hours. Nearly 2 million people gathered in cyclone shelters in preparation for the storm. You can visit VOA Asia Facebook for much more. This is VOA Asia. As we continue with VOA Asia, they're baked, not fried, and all ready for sale at major convenience stores. They are crunchy, high in protein, vitamins, and minerals, but for some people, none of that will be enough to overcome the idea of eating insects. VOA's Arash Arabasadi gets the buzz in this report out of Thailand.
There are bugs crawling all over this farm in Thailand. This room alone is home to more than a million crickets.
When it comes to bugs, there are people who are scared of them, people who eat them, and people who don't.
Smile Farm's revenue holds steady at about $100,000 a month as nearly 2 metric tons of insects pass through on their way to becoming human snack food.
I heard on the news the UN said insects were an alternative source of protein for the future to feed the world's growing population, so I thought, Thais already eat a lot of insects and can get them as street food.
Farm owner and entrepreneur Tanat Chantatham's idea was to package the insects into snack bags. But there was a bit of trial and error finding the right bugs.
I tried black crickets. Even though I am regular when it comes to eating bugs, I still felt like their eyes were staring at me. It felt strange. Then, after we ate them, their legs and wings poked out and got stuck in our teeth and gums.
Once they worked out the kinks, their product landed in supermarkets and convenience stores in original, barbecue, and tom yam flavors. One selling point, bug snacks are healthy options.
The nutritional value of insects has not been recognized in the past, and I think nowadays we're finding that there is a huge potential.
Bugs are rich in vitamins and minerals, but also protein. They're more eco-friendly to raise than traditional livestock. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News, Washington.
This news break from VOA Asia. Tens of thousands of people lined up on a 5-kilometer stretch in central Tokyo to catch a rare glimpse of Emperor Naruhito and Empress Misako. The motorcade was one of the final events of Naruhito's ascension to the throne. Naruhito officially began his reign on the chrysanthemum throne in May. You'll find all the big stories throughout the day on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, last week marked the third anniversary of Donald Trump's 2016 election as the 45th president of the United States. Trump remains a force of nature in American politics, but the third anniversary of his rise to power comes at a time when he is facing the gravest threat yet to his presidency, an impeachment inquiry led by the congressional Democrats over his efforts to pressure Ukraine to investigate political rival Joe Biden. VOA national correspondent Jim Malone has more from Washington.
3 years have passed since that November night when Donald Trump shocked the world with his election as the nation's 45th president.
To all Republicans and Democrats and independents across this nation, I say it is time for us to come together as one united people.
That early appeal for unity faded long ago.
But the more America achieves, the more hateful and enraged these crazy Democrats become.
Trump is now counting on his loyal base of supporters to first withstand impeachment and then carry him to re-election next year.
At stake in this fight is the survival of American democracy itself. Don't kid yourself. That's what they want. They are destroying this country, but we will never let it happen, not even close.
The impeachment probe in the House is focused on Trump's alleged efforts to pressure Ukraine to investigate political rival Joe Biden. Biden has made Trump the issue in his bid to win the Democratic Party's presidential nomination next year.
He talks about there will be a civil war. This is the guy that's unhinged. He is unhinged. I worry about what he's going to do, not about me or my family. I worry about what he'll do in the next year in the presidency.
Like so much in Trump's presidency, the impeachment inquiry is playing out along party lines, says analyst John Fortier.
For Democrats, they believe the president has done something wrong, and they think they're going to bring out more evidence. And I think their hope is that that will turn public opinion against the president, perhaps allow him to be removed. Republicans, I think, are looking at past precedent to say this could be something that backfires on Democrats or at least doesn't catch fire.
Polls show Trump's approval rating at just above 40%, historically weak for an incumbent president trying to fight off impeachment and seeking re-election at the same time. But underestimating Trump's hold on his political base is dangerous, says Republican strategist John Fearon.
Are the Washington pundits, is everyone inside the Beltway missing about Trump? Absolutely. They don't have any clue this guy's real appeal at a visceral level. But one of the reasons why they support him is because he keeps his promises and he's got the economy going.
Even if Trump is eventually impeached by the democratically controlled House, he would likely survive an impeachment trial in the Republican-controlled Senate, says analyst William Galston.
I have believed since the very beginning of impeachment talk, which started up more than a year ago, that if the Democrats are to remove President Trump from office, it will have to be through the electoral process in 2020. Nothing that I've seen so far inclines me to change my mind in the slightest.
3 years into the tumultuous presidency of Donald Trump, Americans are now girding themselves for the prospect of both a partisan battle over impeachment and perhaps the most fiercely contested election in recent memory. Jim Malone, VOA News, Washington.
Amid the tumultuous political news, President Trump is breaking ties from the state of New York, making his official residence in Florida. And now the five-bedroom house where the 45th president of the United States spent his childhood years is on the market. The New York house has changed owners a number of times since it was built in the 1940s by the president's father, Fred Trump. The Trump family lived there for a decade, and the president spent the first 4 years of his life there. Nina Vishneva has the story, narrated by Anna Rice.
Before moving into the classic interiors of the White House, the 45th President of the United States, Donald Trump, enjoyed the modernism of his home in Trump Tower, and decades before that, the neo-Tudor style of his first childhood home in New York City. The future president lived in this house in Queens for just under 4 years. Fred Trump was a prominent New York City real estate developer. The complexes he helped build dot the New York City landscape to this day. This home was no different.
They lived here until about 1950, and after they sold this house, they actually moved to another house. Right here, you can see it out the window.
Today, Donald Trump's first home is up for auction, again. At the end of 2016, Hagani's company already managed to sell the mansion for $1,400,000 and resell it 3 months later for over $2 million. In February, the house hit the market again. This time, the price was almost $3 million, but the deal was never signed.
I would love for President Trump to actually buy the house once and for all so we can stop selling it.
The current owner of the house wanted to remain anonymous, but it is believed he or she has no connection to the president. In 2017, the owner listed the house on the rental website Airbnb for $725 a night. But despite the thrill of the association, tourists who stayed here said the house's age shows, for one, in the malfunctioning plumbing. Surprisingly, few neighbors know about the house's history.
No, I knew there was a very nice guy that lived here before, but he sold it.
She says President Trump used to live in this house.
Really? But some locals know about the house's truly historic past and know what to do with it.
I would hope that differences can be put aside and that the fact that he is a president and will be in history forever, just like any other president, should be preserved and, you know, taken care of.
Bidding will be open until November 14th. Only those who applied to take part in the auction and paid a fee can participate in the auction. The new owner will get 5 bedrooms, an open terrace, a cozy fireplace, and a large library filled with copies of Donald Trump's family photos and his speeches. For Nina Vishneva in New York, Anna Rice, VOA News.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. You can find us at iTunes and SoundCloud. Of course, another great place to download us if you'd like to carry our program as a podcast is go to our website at voanews.com. You can also see videos from us. We have a YouTube channel, and you can follow us on VOA Asia Twitter as well. Lots of great ways to keep VOA Asia part of your day. We'd also like to thank our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Kelvin Fowler, our managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team. That's Ira Melman, Keith Lane, our interns, Hyung, Afra, and Candace. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a wonderful day ahead.